Welcome to this episode of This Way In. Today, we talked about the ego state parts of self. This is the first episode in the series where we're going to be talking about all the different six parts of self. And today, Brittany ran down all of the parts a little bit and how the practice came to be and the method. And she gave us some book suggestions for reference. And so I think this is going to be really, really interesting for you guys. Brittany, anything more about what you talked about today?
I think you nailed it, but my biggest thing was just listen to the caution at the end because dealing with parts of self can be a little scary, just a little bit. So while this is good and fun, do keep in mind that this can take you to places you might not want to go.
Not necessarily this episode. I think you're safe listening to the episode. But
Yes.
once you start diving in and trying to do the work for yourself on yourself, that's when things can get a little hairy. So,
Yes, that's right.
but still, good stuff. Real good
Yeah,
stuff.
absolutely.
All right. Well, we hope you guys enjoy.
Enjoy.
So,
Cool.
parts of self.
Parts of self. Yeah. So
Tell me everything you know
this is what I deal with all day long for
in
my day
one
job
hour.
in 1 hour. Ooh, that might take some time. 1 hour. We'll see. Anyway,
That's okay. This might be two episodes.
yeah, it might have to be. This is what I deal with all day long with my day job. So, being a mental health therapist, a trauma therapist, so a lot of the time it's not just like, oh, I was in a car accident one time and that was bad. It's so much more than that. Like a single incident trauma, EMDR just by itself is good for that. But for everything else that gets complicated, especially the younger it is, the more pervasive or extensive, the more heinous, horrific it is, the more we got to delve into deeper things. And this is where parts of self come in. With the different parts of self, they hang on to different packets of information and experiences and whatnot. So just like with the previous episode of giving the overview, one personality, lots of different parts. There's six basic functions of parts: kid, critical, logical, responsible, nurturing, protector. And so I'll do a more of a overview of all of these parts. So when things are fine, we're just living life. Our expectations are expectations. Yeah, that's the word. Expectations are being met. Things are going well. Boss is good with us. We're financially secure. All of these things. We have our needs met. Things are good. Normally, we're going to see our logical, responsible, nurturing, and kid parts. So our logical part is the one that just thinks logically. This sounds pretty obvious, but logical part thinks logically. There's no time for emotion. If emotions come up, yep, it's an emotion, whatever, and let's move on from that. Logical parts just deal with the facts. So let's say I have some bills to pay. My logical part's gonna be like, all right, when are these bills are due? What do I gotta do to get these bills paid? Am I on auto pay? Do I have to write a check? So on and so forth. So logical part's really just the one figuring out what we gotta do. How do I get from point A to point B? How do I want a new, I don't know. I want a new car. What do I got to do to save up money for that? What sort of financing do I need? So logical part is really just the only one that's there to figure stuff out. When we're actually doing things like going to buy that car, going to pay the bills, then it's a responsible part that's stepping in and acting there. Our responsible part's the doer, while the logical part's the thinker. They go hand in hand. They're a good team. And so logical is thinking I get from point A to point B by going, I-90, blah, 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 whatever. And responsible part's the one that says, all right, I'm in driving in the car, I'm getting there, here's my exit, so on and so forth. As soon as something happens that's not on the agenda or not planned or this is all wrong, then our critical part steps in. So I'm going to get back to that because I'm going to hang out in like when things are going well land. Logical and responsible will do their job very efficiently, very well until something goes wrong. Then they're going to dip out. So I'm going to get back to that. With kid and nurturing, when things are well, nurturing part is there to just take care of us, those around us that we love, our pets. For example, I'm coming home to my husband after work. It's been a long day. Oh, sweetheart, hey, how are you? How was your day? Tell me about it. Oh man, that must have been hard. Give me a hug. Let me make it better for you. That kind of stuff. Our nurturing parts care about our animals fed. Is there clean water in their dish? So nurturing and responsible go hand in hand quite a lot too, because how are you supposed to nurture someone if there's no action or follow through?
Sure.
So nurturing is like, oh, my kitties, their water is so gross. I need to get it cleaned out. Responsible is the one actually cleaning it out.
Sure. Okay.
Their nurturing parts also care about us. Like, what do I need? Oh man, I really need some reassurance right now. So I go up to my husband. Can I get a hug? Okay. So nurturing parts will actually do that too. It's not just responsible acting. Nurturing parts will act as well. And then our kid parts get to come out and play when we're having fun, things are good. And that's usually for just doing the stuff we like to do. We're joking around. We're like excited. Oh, it's the weekend. What do we want to do? This is fun. I'm going to go try a new Indian restaurant somewhere, you know, whatever. So kid parts are curious. They want to be doing things. They want to have fun. Don't want all the responsibilities. Like, man, it's the weekend. I know I've got a million chores around the house I got to do, but I'm going to play some video games. I'm going to play football. I'm going to just go for a walk. I'm going to go fishing. You know, kid parts want to do fun things. And it doesn't matter how old we get, we all have kid parts. I'm just curious, Amy, what sort of stuff do you really like to do that you get super excited about, even these days?
I get excited about going out and like going to happy hour with friends. Talking, going to a new restaurant, like you said, that's a big thing. Just going out and being in the community kind of is what kind of gets me going. Also, I get excited about podcast editing, but that is that's not as fun.
Yep, that responsible stepping in there a little bit too.
But I mean, I do have fun doing it. It is fun, especially when, it's a like a funny episode or something, and I'm laughing the whole time I'm doing it. It's still fun to me. But yeah, mostly it's going out, being with, that's my introvert part. The extrovert part of me, which I do have both, is going out and just chatting with people and being social.
Absolutely. Yes. Our kid parts do want to be social. You know, it's a spectrum of how social our kid parts want to be. It's very individual. And of course, depending on how you're feeling introverted or extroverted, we all have that. So, yeah, your kid part's alive and well, of course. We all have these kid parts that want to come out and have some fun. As we're talking here, it's quite apparent that our parts of self aren't just one at a time. They usually work hand in hand. There's usually a combination of parts working all at the same time. So, for like when you're editing, that's kid and responsible. When you're out socializing, it's probably just kid, but maybe, you know, depending on how much you've had to drink or whatever, well, who's the DD? Or maybe I need to rein in my drinking. So, responsible's there too. It's hard to be an adult and not have that responsible part come in and do his job. That's just kind of the way it goes. But, you know, some of us are more kid or more responsible than other people. I'm sure you can think of some people in your life. They're like, man, they're how old and they're still acting like this. Yeah, they're still driven very much by their kid part rather than maybe the more adult parts like logical, responsible. So that's when things are good. Let's talk about when things aren't so good. So we're having a bad day, or we're deep in a flashback of a trauma, or our spouse is pissed off and they're just being mean to us, or whatever. Our critical part's usually the one that's right in at the forefront. Because as soon as something's wrong or even not quite right, our critical part is very cued into that and jumps right on, like, what the fuck's going on? To varying degrees. Sometimes like, oh, what's happening here? And other times it's like, what's happening here? So it really depends on the situation. For example, we're watching news. There's always something horrific in the news every day, and our critical part can be like, man, this just won't end. Sometimes we can think, well, what do we got to do to make this better? That's also our critical part. Both of those, what do I do to make it better? And this, there's nothing good. It's always going to be bad. It's very ends of the spectrum for critical part as well. The more burdened our critical parts get, so burdened with junk from like the past, traumas, bad relationships, you name it, whatever, it gets more burdened. So the more burdened our critical parts are, the more negative we tend to get, the more just, eh, we don't have excitement. We're just cynical, jaded, all of those things. I'm sure you can think of someone who's just constantly in a pissy mood. I can think of several people as well. It's not fun to be around them, is it? Yeah, it's not. When our kid
No.
parts want to come out and play, like you're so
Yeah.
social and they're just like, eh, it's like, eh, right back at them. So
Yeah.
our critical parts come out too. That's kind of a hallmark for critical parts. Anytime someone else's critical parts right there at the forefront, ours just comes right out too. It's really hard to stay in a good mood, to stay curious, having fun, if someone else is just being a stick in the mud. Really. Have you had experiences like that? I'm sure you have.
I had a boyfriend in college. Hopefully he's not listening to this. All my friends called him the stick in the mud.
Wow.
He didn't want to do anything. And I mean, he could be fun, and he did have fun sometimes, but a lot of time he was just, ugh, I don't like that. Oh, I don't like that. Oh, this is terrible. Oh, I don't like that movie. Oh, that movie was bad. Oh, I don't want to go to that restaurant. I had something there 5 years ago and I didn't like it. You know, that kind of thing still. Yeah, he was literally called the stick in the mud.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yes. So people like that who are very critical dominant in that way are just super to be around. Then there's people who very critical dominant that are even beyond that. They're just straight up assholes constantly. Not like they're just trying to have a good time. They're trying to not have a good time. They're trying to make everyone else have a bad time too. You ever met anyone like that?
Not people that are like that all the time, but people that are like that enough of the time where it's a problem.
For sure. Yeah. So what I'm really trying to explain is there's such a scale of critical part. It can be just like, yeah, this kind of sucks. This ain't quite right. Maybe we can make it better too. This is fucking terrible all the time. Yes. So critical parts are very tricky. When I deal with parts of self with my clients on an individual basis, it's usually the critical part that has the most work that needs to be done with it. For example, critical parts are very skeptical, cynical, jaded. So a lot of it is I've got to see it to believe it. So like when you are presented with something new and you're like, I don't know if this makes sense and I don't know if I buy this kind of stuff, how much like chewing through it or time does it take for you to reach a conclusion like that, yeah, this is legit or not? Just in general.
In general, it doesn't take me that long. It depends on where I'm getting the information.
Yes.
If I'm getting it from one person who is dead set on this and I'm not buying it, I'm not going to buy it right away. I'm going to go get another opinion.
Yes.
But if it's something that I'm close to getting and then they explain it really well, then I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. Usually it doesn't take me that long.
Which is good. That's how we want our critical parts to be. We want them to be considering, hey, is this right? Is this wrong? How much can I trust this? But when our critical parts are constantly like shooting it down, like this is wrong, this is bad, I can't trust this. That is just you that's the type of person you probably don't want to spend a lot of time with because you're going to be in a bad mood constantly.
Or you just have to not talk about whatever it is.
Or anything. It's just people who are so burdened critical dominant. So when I say critical dominant, that's the part of self that's usually in the driver's seat. So when I say in the driver's seat, that's whatever part or us is consciously calling the shots. So I'm going to get to protector in just a sec, but the overview of all of these parts of self is the self. The self is the whole. So that cliche, the sum of the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. That's the self. The self is the ability to have self-awareness, to look inward, to self-reflect, to be like, all right, which part of me was acting up there? All right, it was kid part. That part was really upset because of XYZ, and my critical part took over because my kid part was upset. So the self is this neutral, wise adult ability to really look inward and know what's going on, to direct what's going on when needed. A lot of the time, people describe the self as like the teacher in the classroom full of kids or the coach for the team, where like the team is our parts of self. Sometimes, when our parts of self know that the self should be in control, but they take over anyway, a lot of the time it's protector or critical, they'll come back later and be like, well, you weren't doing good enough to the self. And so there's more work to be done there. So critical parts again get to be super tricky, and if I have to spend a lot of time doing parts work before I can work on traumas with clients, it's dealing with critical parts.
Okay.
Out of all of them, kid parts hang on to so much junk, but it's our critical parts that constantly have the issue and need to work through that. When our critical parts don't need to work through it anymore, then we can get to the deeper stuff, and then that's where the magic happens. The critical part has to be convinced that this is the right thing.
Well, I can see that just because people that are naysayers are people that probably wouldn't seek out therapy in the first place, and then they go because that someone told them to. And then they're like, oh, this isn't going to work, so I don't even know why I'm wasting my time. And you got to get through that before anything is going to improve.
Absolutely. The statistics show that for therapy to be effective, a client has to have hope and expectation that therapy is going to be beneficial.
Okay.
That's
Makes sense.
like half the magic. If they don't have that hope and expectation that therapy is going to help them, then it's not going to, period. And that always starts with critical part. It's our critical part that says, this is good, this is not good, this is right, this isn't right. And then varying degrees more than that. That's the basic principle of what our critical parts do, right and wrong, good and bad, that kind of stuff. So when we have our protector parts come in, that's usually when critical parts get to be more burdened. The more burdened our protector parts are, the more burdened our critical parts are. But that also says how burdened our kid parts are. It's always sort of equal. The more burdened our kid parts are, that's as burdened as protector and critical parts are going to be too, if that makes sense at all. Doesn't. So with our protector parts, they are most concerned about our burdened kid parts. So the ones that hang on to junk and trauma and big emotions that are really hard to deal with. As soon as a protector part notices that emotion that comes from that burdened kid part is getting kicked up, then they have to go into high gear to get it tamped back down somehow. So a lot of the time it's distracting or avoiding or doing something else, just going away from what's welling up in that kid part. Or kid parts, we have lots of parts. So a big thing that we all kind of do is like doom scroll. Like we just get on our phones, we just look through stuff, it's brainless, and that is our protector part trying to avoid feeling what we don't want to feel or dealing with what we don't want to deal with. These little things like that seem super innocuous, playing on the phone, just watching TV, zoning out with a good book, like there's nothing wrong with that. But if all you're doing is avoiding, distracting, you're not dealing with anything. You're going to be constantly avoiding and distracting the rest of your life, and that gets old. I don't know about you, but sometimes when I'm on my phone long enough, I'm like, man, I'm over this. I need something else to do.
I mean, I can do it for a long time, but a lot of times that's also like, I know this isn't good for me. I got to find something else. You know, it's and it's not just that I'm bored. It's that I know I need to vary my intake. What goes into my eyeballs, earballs?
Yes, absolutely. So that's a logical part there saying, well, there's only so much of this that's going to be good for you. Let's do something else. And with protector part being less burdened than I'm assuming a lot of people, it's like, all right, let's do something else. If your protector part was super burdened, though, it'd be like, screw that, and I'm just going to stay on the phone. It doesn't matter. Like other parts of you can be screaming at you, like, you need to do something else. This isn't good for you. Like, I don't care. I'm still on my phone. That's what our protector parts do. They will override practically every other part if they think they need to. So, the most obvious example I give of this is like, let's say you're watching your kids or playing ball. The ball goes in the street. A car's coming. Kid runs after the ball in the street. You're not thinking. You're just reacting. You're running after the kid. Scoop up the kid. Like, God, what did you do that for? I'm so scared. I'm so happy. You're okay. You know, that's our protect part. Like, your body's moving before you even realize what's going on. This also happens when people like say, oh, I was so pissed off. I blacked out and I just started swinging at the guy. Like, for example, some guy makes a pass at your girlfriend and you black out because that's your protector part taking over and just start swinging.
Can I just ask, your protector part is that protecting you? It's you say it's protecting you, right? But also it can be protecting other people in your life.
Absolutely. Yes. So just like nurturing part takes care of us, takes care of other people. Protector part will protect us and those that we love, our pets, our family, whatever, objects, just whatever that we care about. Our protector part's on top of it. The more we care about something, the more our protector part is going to be cued into it. I'm trying to think of an example. Let's say you have a bunch of pets and like you have a favorite pet and both of them go out in the street. You save your p favorite pet first. Not like you would do that. I know you would try to save all of your pets equally, but I mean, that's just an example. There
Well, I used to have a cat I didn't like, so
you go.
I'm familiar. I would still save him, but he wouldn't be the first on the list.
Sure. You know what I'm saying then. Sometimes when our protector parts get really burdened, that's when things get scary because really burdened protectors tag team with burdened critical parts. Basically, they think everything is a threat. You look at me wrong. You're a threat. You said something I didn't want to hear. You're a threat. Anything, anything. Black cat walks in front of you. Oh, this black cat's got to die because it's bad news, you know? So protector parts and critical parts, they really get to the point where we have to eliminate threats. And that usually means hurting or killing things or people. So that's when things get scary.
Scary, yeah.
Yeah. Ted Bundy is probably a good example. Like I've seen enough documentaries and whatnot about him where people would say, well, people who lived say like his eyes just turned black or whatever. And
Yeah.
I don't know his history well enough to definitively say, but knowing that he was given up for adoption and that kind of stuff, he has severe attachment trauma. And so the threat from attachment trauma really comes from the very, very deep basic needs that we have, just the need to be validated that you're a human, because you're a human, you have value and worth. That need was not met. And so anytime that unmet need gets triggered, then protector part just takes over everything. Critical part, protector part just run the show. And then it's just in a split second, he's trying to kill someone because that threat was so big. I don't have a better example than that, but basically, anytime someone murders someone or worse, it's protector part saying this person is just too big to keep around for my own safety in other ways. And it's not physical safety, it's usually emotional safety that protector parts really
Sure.
freak out about. Because let's face it, with Ted Bundy, like those women he were killing, there's no way they were a physical threat to him.
Right.
So it was all.
Right. And like other serial killers too, I'm thinking, they don't even know their victim.
Right.
They fit a description.
Yes.
And so like let's say they look like their mother. So then the mother is what's coming up for him, right? The
Yes.
threat of whatever his mother was doing, and now he has to kill this woman because she looks like his mother.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yep. John Wayne Gacy. So him, one of the things that I know that he killed people for is he was a family man. He was a member of the community. He was a straight white guy, but apparently not. And so anytime someone had any sort of like knew he was into dudes or knew what he was like, they had to die because that was a threat to his life,
Sure, his reputation,
his
yeah.
reputation, his lifestyle, all of those things.
Yep.
Yeah. So really, protector parts in these instances aren't necessarily killing for our physical safety. So for most people, our protector parts aren't that burdened. They're not that out of whack. And so if we end up killing someone, it's really because it's self-defense. So we're being physically attacked, someone's breaking and entering our home, whatever. That's when we kill someone because we have to for our own life, essentially.
Survival, yeah.
Yeah, and then we feel horrible, like, oh, I can't believe that happened. How did I do that? And oh, I wish I wouldn't have done that, and all of these things. But people whose protector parts, like these serial killers, they won't think that. They'll just be like, did what I had to do and move
Yeah.
on. Very robotic in a lot of ways because protector parts at that point are so far disconnected from the other parts of self, especially nurturing part, logical, responsible kid, so far removed from those parts. Protector part is just one track mind. So as protector and critical parts that we really got to be leery of for ourselves, even as soon as we notice we're being super negative, like, okay, what's going on? What's going on with our critical part? Why are we being so negative? Why are we being an asshole to someone? That's the first thing we got to ask ourselves, to look inward and to figure out, okay, yeah, I'm feeling out of sorts because of X, Y, and Z, and my critical part's just on top of it because my kid part's feeling so whatever. If we don't self-reflect, then we can very easily, every single one of us can very easily delve into asshole territory or worse. It can be really detrimental, not just to ourselves, but to our relationships, those around us. So the people that you know that have been super negative in your life, how have you ended up feeling around those people after a while?
I can, it depends how I'm feeling, how I came into it. If I was already in a bad mood, then I spiral into whatever I just sponge off whatever they're giving out. Because I don't know if I'm officially an empath or anything, but I definitely feel other people's energy and feel other people's stuff. And if someone's in a great mood and I'm not in a great mood, I'll be in a great mood, you know? And so it goes both ways. So if I'm in a really good mood and the person is doing that, I just have to walk away. I
That's
just have
right.
to say, we're not talking about this anymore. I'm not gonna continue this situation. I'll go do something else, or I'll talk to somebody else if I'm out in public until that other person calms down or changes their mind. Otherwise, I will get into it with them, trying to convince them not to feel this way or think this way. And that never works.
That's
And
right.
so then I just get defeated and then I get upset and then I'm mad. And so I've learned that I just have to be like, okay, done. I'm not continuing this conversation anymore.
Yeah, which is a good boundary for yourself. What happens there is your critical part starts getting with their critical part, and it's just a downward spiral. Yeah, and so you've learned for yourself, like, I'm not even going there. I'm just like, cut it off, move on. Yeah, and so that was probably logical, probably protector in there a little bit too, because you know you how you end up feeling. You don't want to feel like that. You don't want to think like that. So just call it as soon as you notice it. You're going to be good. So exactly. That's your parts of self helping you out there. That's where you what you want your protector and logical part to be doing for you.
Good.
When you did get into those sort of critical spirals with other people, when you've walked away from that, how did you feel emotionally and physically?
Drained. Drained. Like I have no energy. And like almost hopeless. Like, you know, like, well, I can't do nothing's gonna. I'm also like a fixer. Like if somebody's upset, I want to make them feel good, you know, that kind of thing. So, and if I haven't done that, then I feel like I failed at that, you know. So it's a lot of bad, negative feelings and physically feeling like drained. Like I could just zonk out.
And that's a good mention of how that happens. Like when our critical parts and protector parts are in the driver's seat, our stress response is on. The more burdened our critical and protector parts are, the more our stress response is on. And so having that sort of dialogue that's just the downward spiral that your stress response turns on is just getting higher and higher and higher and higher. And then by the time it's over, it can crash. And that's when you're drained because you were working with so much energy just through the stress response. And as soon as you can be done with it, stress response is done with it too. Screw that. That sucked. Yeah, so it's often very detrimental to us to be dealing with very burdened critical part people on a regular basis. Have you ever worked at a job where your boss was super negative, or you had a super negative coworker, or someone that was just kind of in your orbit constantly? How was that job for you?
It was easier when they didn't come to work. It just makes a bad feeling in the for everybody. I mean, I worked with somebody she was grumpy all the time. I always pictured her like the Peanuts character that has the black over her above her head. She was always grumpy and looked grumpy and walked around wah, 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 all the time. And she was also kind of funny. And so sometimes you weren't sure if she was just doing a bit or if she was really grumpy. Most of the time she was just really grumpy,
Got it.
but it was really hard to be around her.
Yeah.
And everybody felt it. It wasn't just the people that were right across the hall. It was anybody who encountered her during the day.
Yeah.
And we all kept saying, I can't imagine being her. It's hard enough being around her. I can't imagine being her.
Right?
But yeah, it makes it hard for anybody to get along or have feelings with anybody that is a positive interaction when you've got Grumpus over there bitching about everything.
That's right. Yeah, Grumpus, I love that. It's kind of amazing how much you can feel the difference in the air when someone like that's around or not. I bet the day she was gone, everyone was in a better mood.
For sure.
Yeah. And so the other point of these parts of self, it's not just how they're interacting, what they're saying, doing. It's the emotional fields, the psychic feel, the aura feel, just the feel that we get being around these people is so vastly different. If you're with someone who's full in kid part, they're excited, they want to be doing this, and it's like, then you can feel that excitement too. It's almost like jittery electric, but oh, this is a good jittery electric. I like this. When you're on Grumpus, it's like, it's heavy. It's just, I can't even move. It's just so thick. Yeah. And when you're around logical, responsible, there's not much of a feel. It's just, yeah, let's get this done. It's kind of a motivating sort of feel, but you don't really feel it as much, but you know what's there. So anyway, I could go on and on and on about the different feels of these parts of self, but I'm curious, with me just giving the deeper overview of these parts, what sort of things are you curious about? What sort of questions are lingering? What do you want to know more?
I would like if you could explain what is burdened versus unburdened. You've mentioned the parts can be burdened and that's bad, or and unburdened and they're good. In general, very, very general terms. But what, like, I assume that trauma is what makes a part burdened. But what do you actually like? What is an example, or not an example? Example would be good too, but an actual explanation of what burdened versus unburdened is.
Yeah, absolutely. So unburdened parts of self, those are the parts that are free to just do what they are meant to do. For example, if logical part is unburdened, then if I'm sitting down to do some math problems, like doop 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 doop, easy peasy, got this done. If my logical part's burdened, it's like, oh, I don't want to do these math problems right now. And as you're hearing more critical come out. Critical comes out with logical when logical is burdened, because logical will only stick around long enough until it's like, screw it, I'm out. So like, I've got to get these math problems done, but I'm not thinking as straight. It's not as good. And logical is getting burdened because underneath is kid part feeling, oh, I suck at math. I'm not good enough. So there's a lot of negative cognitions. Negative cognitions are any like negative self-belief that you know logically isn't true, but it still feels true. So logical is like, I know you're good at math. You can do this. But kid part's like, no, I suck at math. I'm terrible. I don't know what I'm doing. So that's what makes logical burden, is the other parts kind of dragging it down. So logical parts don't necessarily hang on to junk or trauma. It's the other parts. Responsible parts can hang on to junk and trauma. For example, if I was fired at my job because I didn't do something right, my responsible part's going to be the one taking on that burden. I did something wrong. I couldn't fix this. My boss hates me because I wasn't responsible enough, or I didn't know what I was doing well enough, or whatever, whatever, whatever. And so, anytime something bad happens and we just kind of internalize it, that's a burden. Something as innocuous as my husband looked at me funny, to something very, very traumatic, like I was born into sex trafficking. That's a very traumatic thing, of course.
Of course.
So the more just shit we go through, the more parts of self will just kind of hang on to it and contain it. So that the more a part of self is containing that junk from the past, little T trauma, like husband looked at me funny, to big T trauma, I was born into sex trafficking. It doesn't matter to the limbic system. The limbic system is the parts of self that are involved with the stress response. Doesn't matter to that, doesn't matter to stress response, doesn't matter to parts of self. If it's something bad, then they're hanging on to it. unless we can work through it. So the more, again, the more junk our parts of self hang on to from the past, the more burdened they get. And sometimes parts of self hang on to so much they can't hang on to all of it. And so we have to develop another part of self just to hang on to some of the other junk. This is where things get really complicated with like dissociative identity disorder, formerly called multiple personality disorder. It's not multiple personalities. It is one personality. I can't emphasize that enough. One personality. Lots of parts, though. Again, just to review, like a car engine, it's one engine, but lots of different parts in that engine. So when our parts of self go through something so traumatic, they have to kind of split off to contain different aspects of the trauma. That makes those parts in and of themselves exceptionally burdened because they can't hang on to anymore. They're as burdened as they're going to get. So that's the difference between burden and unburden. The more burdened a part is, the more dysfunctional that part tends to be, and the more dysfunctional we tend to be. So if all of our parts of self are unburdened, that means we're going through life, things are good, our relationships are pretty straightforward, we have a good relationship with ourselves, we can operate no problem, like I can get to work, I can do all these things, no issues. The more burdened I am, the harder it is to just get out of bed, to just brush my teeth, to just do anything, to have good relationships, to like myself, to get to a job that I'm happy with instead of feeling, oh my God, I'm going to get fired today, so on and so forth. So the more burdened our parts of self get to be, the harder it is for us to operate in any situation.
So if a person has a burdened kid part, that usually comes from not having their needs met as a child, right?
So, a lot of the time, yes. That's not always the case, but it is a lot of the time.
And then protector part comes out to protect that little child. And then with all their shit, does that make them burdened as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah. The more burdened our kid parts are, the more burdened protector, critical, nurturing tend to be. Responsible, logical, if they can kind of keep doing their own thing, they're not going to be as burdened. For some people, like they're really good about compartmentalizing, and that's kind of an old term that I think we all know and heard. We know what it is. So compartmentalizing is basically, well, I'm feeling this way, so I'm just going to kind of shove it off this way and I'm going to focus on this. And that's what our parts of self are there for, to help us compartmentalize, because we're not going to get through life if we're constantly stuck on how we're feeling terrible. We're not going to be productive. We're not going to be able to do anything, like let alone take care of our basic bodily needs. If I'm deep in my emotion, I'm not eating anything, I'm not taking care of anything. So compartmentalizing is so important. That's why we have parts of self. So, yes, the more burdened kid parts tend to be, the more burdened the rest of our parts tend to be. And at some point, logical and responsible can't even do their job. Have you met anyone who's, like, for example, so depressed that they can't even get to work? They can't do it consistently. They just can't keep a job. How hard is it for that person that you know for them to do anything else?
I know that the person I'm thinking of, I never really thought about it as her being depressed, but she definitely was unable to do much of anything. She didn't shower, I don't think. She didn't wash her clothes. She would show up, she was a drinker. So she would show up, already drunk at 3 o'clock and, and things like that. She could never keep a job. Every job she had, she got fired. Just, and everything, oh, everything went wrong. And never I did something wrong. It was always this happened to me. I'm a victim. And this the, then I got evicted. And then I, well, you got evicted because you didn't pay your goddamn bills, and it never taking responsibility for anything that was going wrong. It was always out external things that were happening to her.
Absolutely. That's a great example of how logical and responsible can't even do their job anymore.
They've just given up.
They've just,
Sounds like, yeah.
because how are they supposed to operate when there's that much heaviness coming out of her kid and protector parts? Protector part is basically saying, oh, you don't have to go to work. Oh, don't pay the bill. You're going to be okay. It's fine. because thinking about paying the bills or going to work was too overwhelming. And so that's when logical response were like, there's nothing I can do. I'm done. Yeah. So that's th logical responsible. Well, responsible does. Logical doesn't necessarily get burdened. It just goes offline. Screw it, I'm out. Responsible will still try something, anything, but it's like when it gets to be everyone else's fault, then responsible is feeling super overwhelmed too and can't do its job as well, even though it's still trying. So one thing I definitely should probably talk about is like the history of ego state. So I know I brought up how pretty much started with Freud, id, ego, superego, that kind of stuff. There's been a lot of different transformations and iterations over the years to where we have internal family systems now, and that's a evidence-based essentially modality. So when we have evidence-based modalities, a modality is a therapeutic technique to help work out, it doesn't have to be trauma, but just to help with someone in therapy. So a modality, it can be internal family systems, which is a type of ego state therapy. It can be cognitive behavioral therapy. It can be EMDR. So that's a modality. It's just a different therapeutic technique you're using. So with internal family systems, Dr. Richard Schwartz, he's the guy who developed this one. It's evidence-based because he's been able to replicate his methodology and do studies that basically show its effectiveness, like CBT has, EMDR has. Ego state in general, since there's a lot of different ways to do this, has not been as extensively studied and whatnot. And so when it comes to talking about ego state, I'm talking about any type of ego state. Internal family systems is just one of them. I use a bunch of techniques from that, but I also use other ones such as structural dissociation, which is just a framework of how parts of self dissociate. So dissociate is a spectrum. A lot of people think it's a big mythical thing. It's not. Everyone dissociates. So like we're driving home from work and we're like, tra-la-la, I'm in my head, I'm just reviewing the day. And then we make it home like, oh, that was fast. How did I get here so quick? Because we were spacing off. That is a form of dissociation. So that's the very mild end of the spectrum. We all get that. Dissociation is just a lack of conscious awareness to something. So if I'm spacing off, I'm not consciously aware of me driving. A part of me is aware of me driving, but I'm not. I, me, the self, I am not consciously aware of doing that. So that's dissociation. And the far end of the spectrum is parts of self are so far separated and removed from each other that they will jump in and out of the driver's seat and the self won't even know it. Like sometimes we lose track of time and a part of self had just taken over, and someone will explain, well, you said X, Y, and Z, and you did A, B, C, and you were like, I did. How'd I do? I don't remember saying that. So that's kind of the farther end of the spectrum, but there's even worse than that. So dissociation, structural dissociation basically is the framework of how parts of self get to be exiled. And exiled is an IFS term, internal family system. So exiled parts of self get to be so far removed from us that we don't even know they exist anymore. Protector parts will do that because this is just too much to deal with. We have to get rid of it somehow, whether it bury it so deep or just bury ourselves in something else, that essentially that part's so dissociated, we don't know what's there. I can get deeper into things, but that's basically structural dissociation. It's just kind of that framework of how this works. And then there's easy ego state interventions, oops, which is basically just any part of self that has a struggle. So let's say I was seven and I goofed up at my choral concert. And so I've been feeling like super embarrassed ever since I was seven, every time I think about that. So basically, easy ego state intervention says, let's take a look at that 7-year-old and just kind of see the facial expressions, body language, all of that stuff. And let's just start talking with that part. So there's no real like heavy framework. It's just let's go with what works. Then there's dynamic needs meeting strategy. This works with child parts of self that have unmet needs from childhood. So basically, our childhood needs are to have our emotions validated, empathized with, to be given real life information. If we have things go wrong, to have that explanation, to have the support. If we have to grieve, to be taught how we're supposed to grieve and what that is, so on and so forth. There's so many more childhood needs than that. So DNMS, the Dynamic Needs Meeting Strategy, basically is the ego state just to fill those unmet needs in child parts.
Okay.
There's so much more. So, for example,
Brittany's showing books right now for those of you who are not watching, you're just listening. And so I'll put all the names of the books in the show notes
yes,
if you want
thank
to reference that. Otherwise, just watch the video.
you. Thank you, Amy. Yes. Then there's Sandra Paulson. She does kind of a mix of things. So she uses structural dissociation, but she also uses sort of like the TNMS, the easy ego state. She will basically go to any part of self that has a bunch of trauma and deal with that part. A lot of what she does is pre-verbal trauma. So pre-verbal trauma is anything that happens to us before we talk.
Wow.
And that deals with implicit memory. And implicit memory isn't like our words and picture play-by-play memory. It's what we end up feeling physically and emotionally with any sort of trigger. And a trigger could be a touch, a smell, anything sensory. It could be a situation, it could be a dynamic, and then we're starting to feel some way, physically, emotionally, whatever, and we have no idea why. That's usually from pre-verbal trauma or pre-verbal experiences. Our bodies, our emotions remember, but our prefrontal cortex does not remember. So
Interesting.
that's what she deals with a lot. And a lot of what I deal with is that too. So
Really?
yeah, a lot of the ego state stuff I deal with is pretty advanced. And I can get really deep into that, but I just wanted to do this overview. There's a lot of different ways of doing ego state. The main people who kind of brought all of this together in the past, Freud started it, and then, Jung, and then there's Freud's contemporaries and so on and so forth. And then in like the 70s, Watkins is, I think it was a married couple. I don't remember the first names, but Watkins, they basically, I don't want to say codified, but they basically kind of brought all of this together into a nice, neat little package that explained what ego states are and what ego state therapy is. And so from Watkins has come all of these other ones, like structural dissociation, IFS, easy ego states, all of these ones. So Watkins really helped to bring it all together. And then things started kind of branching off again. When I was in grad school, working toward my master's of social work, there was one class that we took that was basically like an overview of modalities. And the professor I had, he's passed away now, which he was a good guy, but he was very like antiquated in what he was teaching us. So we got the basic stuff like CBT, but we also got transactional analysis, which most people have never heard of. It's a type of ego state therapy that's very basic. It deals with three ego state parts of self. So that would be parent, child, and just general adult. So in these transactional analysis ego state, it's again very basic. Like, well, how are you feeling in your interactions with this person? Are you feeling like a child? Are you feeling like an adult? Are you feeling like a parent? So I mean, it's very basic and very, I don't know if unhelpful is the right word, but it's just
That's the
not very helpful.
I was thinking. Yeah.
So anyway, I just wanted to kind of throw off that there's so many different ways of doing this. So if you are interested in doing ego state, just looking into it yourself, diving into it yourself, there's a good book called The Shadow Work Journal, and this is based off of Jungian parts work. So the shadow is basically the parts of us that we don't know about. So for example, if we have any part of us that's like we're ashamed of as well, like, oh, I know this is in me, but I don't want it to come out. That's also part of the shadow. So anything that we don't know about or anything we're keeping inside. There's
Is
also,
that what they mean when they say you're doing shadow work?
Yeah, you're dealing with parts of self that you don't know well or you just don't know, period. So that's shadow work. So that's one. There's also a book by Richard Schwartz. You're the one you've been waiting for. This is geared toward basically anybody, Joe Schmo off the street, to deal with their own parts of self. That's a good one. And as far as any other like layperson book, I don't think there's many because it's geared toward clinicians. So basically, these two, You're the One You've Been Waiting For in the Shadow Work Journal, those are the best ones I could suggest. But also Easy Ego State Interventions. This is very accessible. Anyone can read this and understand what's going on. So Robin Shapiro, who wrote this book, I actually met her in person for the training she was giving for this, and she's really funny. She's super lightheaded. Oh my God, lighthearted. I think she said she's from Sioux City, Iowa, originally. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm a girl. That's great. So anyway, she's very accessible. Her book is probably the one I would give out the most out of all of these three, for lay people, essentially.
I'll put links in the show notes
Okay.
and yeah, and we'll maybe do a blog post or something too
Yeah, sounds good.
with all that.
Yeah. What really set me into doing parts work, though, was after I started doing training for EMDR, so eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. There's different levels of training in EMDR. So you can be a, basically trained EMDR clinician. The basic training is basically like 30 hours of training. So like you're in the actual training, you're doing the practice with the other trainees, whatnot, and then 10 hours of consultation on top of that. So they expect you to start using EMDR when you're working with clients, right? It's two trainings, like weekends that are several months apart. So after the first half of the training, they expect you to start using it right away. And by the
Interesting.
time you're done with that second half of the training, you should have 10 hours of consultation, or at least working toward 10 hours of 10 hours of consultation. So that's basically you're talking with an EMDR approved consultant, and I'll explain that in a minute, but you're talking with them for 10 hours about your cases. So I have this case, I'm doing X, Y, and Z, I'm kind of stuck here. What do you suggest? So on and so forth. So that's consultation. So that's to be basically trained. You have to have these 2 weekends plus the 10 hours of consultation completed to be basic trained. Once you're basically trained, you can do EMDR just fine. However, that is the bottom level. Most people you're doing EMDR with don't have that, oh, I was in a bad car accident and it was one and done kind of deal. That's not it. You're dealing with people who have chronic trauma, whose lives are constantly in flux, so on and so forth. And so that's when you want to keep working towards certification. Certification is another 20 hours of consultation on top of that first 10. You also have to see so many clients for so many EMDR sessions to be certified. So certification is really when people start diving into deeper things. And so that's when I started diving into deeper things too. I went to Jim Knipes' EMDR Toolbox training. This is one of the best books, one of the best trainings I've ever taken in my life. Jim Knipes, if I ever meet him in person, I'll probably get, I did meet him in person, but if I meet him in person again, I'll probably give him a big hug. He has really set me on the right path. So when he was doing this training for EMDR Toolbox, which this is not necessarily a book for lay people, but it is fantastic. He was talking about apparently normal parts or emotional parts. And he was starting talking about parts of self. I'm like, what is this guy even talking about? I feel like I'm so lost. And my consultant at the time was actually at the training too. And I remember talking with her. I'm like, I feel like I'm missing something. And she was just like looking at me like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. Not my favorite consultant. But anyway, she was good for what I needed. Yeah, so that's when I started diving deeper into parts of self. And when I was first doing parts of self stuff, it was really loosey-goosey, like I'm just going off basically what Jim says. And so his framework is structural dissociation. So it was the apparently normal part of self, which is basically the part that we all see. Like if you're at work and you're putting on a face, things are good. That's the apparently normal part, but you might be feeling really like depressed or sad or anxious or whatever underneath, that's your emotional part. So that's more of the basic stuff. So once I started getting into the deeper EMDR things and getting deeper into the ego state stuff, I just kept going further and further and further. And to where ego state is my main jam, with EMDR basically in an adjunct. Whereas I started with EMDR just straight up, and the ego state was an adjunct. I flipped it. What really set me on this path to flip it was my training with Julie Debevoise, who came up with the basic six-part system. So this is a psychotherapist out of New York who has kind of incorporated these different ego state things into her own system. She knew about the different functions of parts, and that's how she started her framework. And that's what I do. Kid critical, logical, responsible, protector, those are hers. And so with her framework, I was able to be more concise and like structured with what I was doing, whereas before it was more loosey-goosey, like I said. So doing the mental meeting space, that's basically a way to visualize inside what's going on with their parts of self. So mental meeting space is just a place for a client that's real or imaginary, somewhere they've been to, somewhere they haven't, but somewhere that feels comfortable but conducive for dealing with parts of self. And so she came up with that. She came up with a basic six-part system. And since I took that training for the first time in 2018, then I have been an ego state therapist as my main jam, essentially since then. It is so important to know what you're working with on the inside with yourself, with a client, so you can have a better understanding of how you're trying to get to where you want to be. I don't know if that makes sense, does it? Okay.
I think so.
All right. So basically, everyone I talk to as a client, I do the parts of self with. Even if we're not necessarily doing ego state constantly or even much at all, I always start with parts of self with the concept, because sometimes it just helps, like for people to know, oh, it makes so much sense why I'm so confident here but feeling so anxious there, and it doesn't make sense why I could be so confident and not so confident. It's different parts of self. So really, just being able to explain all of this really demystifies so many things for people.
When you're working on your mental health, sometimes the smallest rituals make the biggest difference. That's why we love Three Spirit, award-winning non-alcoholic elixirs designed by plant scientists and bartenders to help you feel good in every sense. Each blend has its own mood. Social Elixir helps you to connect and feel uplifted. Livener brings energy and focus without the crash. And Nightcap soothes your mind and body into real rest. Instead of numbing out, these drinks help you tune in, whether you need connection, energy, or calm. Head to us.threespiritdrinks.com and use the code THISWAYIN for 15% off your first order. Three Spirit, crafted for your mind, body, and balance.
All right, I feel like I've kind of went off the rails there. Where do I need to get back to?
I don't know. I think that's good. I think that's a good overview of what we plan to do for the rest of this series, which is to each episode or each week take one of the parts and really talk about that part. And then we'll end, I think, with how they all work together, which you've already done a little bit of, but now I like a way to explain all that stuff once listeners have learned everything that you're going to teach us about the different parts, then you can get into like more examples and things like scenarios and stuff like that where they work together.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That sounds good.
Oh, I think this is fun. I love this stuff. So interesting to me. It's so cool.
I've said for several years now doing therapy that everyone's brain is a universe. Just how deep we all are. Like some of us are pretty shallow, but in general, in general, we're pretty deep.
That's cool. That's a cool way to look at it.
It gets messy. So my only caution I want to throw out there to people who are listening to this, to people who are interested in dealing with their own parts of self, is sometimes getting into parts of self, you might find something you're not particularly fond of. Something can be scary. Something can be really like you want to avoid. For example, I had a friend who I was talking with about parts of self. She was interested. She was like, oh, walk me through it. And we started talking with her parts of self. And then one of her kid parts remembered something that happened to her when she was a teenager with a boyfriend at the time. She's like, oh man, I really don't want to deal with this right now. And so her protector part shut it down. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. She wasn't ready to go there. That's all right. So sometimes diving deeper can bring up things you don't necessarily want to know, things that you've, well, most of you have forgotten, things that can be scary, things that can be really destabilizing even. For example, some of the older people that I've worked with who have been depressed their whole lives, turns out it was preverbal trauma. And they found out what that trauma was through Sandra Paulson's sort of interventions of the dealing with the preverbal trauma and ego state that way. They realized, oh, something bad really happened and I did not want to know about, but I guess we're working through it, so that's a good thing. So if you're diving into your own parts of self by yourself and you come up with something that you're really scared of or you don't want to deal with, that's okay. You don't have to keep going into it. This is just for fun. And if you want to do something deeper with your parts of self, I highly suggest finding an ego state therapist. You can do this work on your own, of course. That's what the shadow work journal's for, but that doesn't go as deep. You can also develop some skills just by listening to what we're talking about and doing it that way. But again, this can be scary. This can be destabilizing. So if you, again, if you find that there's a part of self that you weren't expecting to find, or there's some burden there that you weren't expecting, just take a deep breath. It'll be okay. And just reevaluate where you actually want to go with it. So that's my caution. This can be
All right.
scary.
Yeah, I imagine, especially if it's something that your protector, I suppose, has hidden from you
Yes,
from
absolutely.
so long,
Yeah.
or pre-verbal stuff where you just didn't even really know what was going on.
Right.
That's, I never heard of the pre-verbal stuff. And I guess I assume that if something happened to a baby, that it would stick with them,
Yeah.
but it is hard to wrap my head around how that baby as an adult would find that or figure that out or deal with that.
Yeah. It's definitely a longer process of dealing with preverbal trauma because as adults, we have logical and responsible parts to be able to put words to it, to put meaning to it. Whereas preverbal trauma, we don't have words, we don't have meaning, just feeling exactly. And so being able to bring that from very, very, very young kid parts to more adult parts to the self, that in and of itself is often the healing that's necessary. Just to validate and empathize with what happened with that part, to say it wasn't your fault or you're safe now, that kind of stuff. That's where the magic happens. So that's what unburdening a part of self does. Helping that part of self let go of the burden, working through the rest of the stress response so it can successfully turn off, so on and so forth. So unburdening a part of self is always what I'm going for when I do ego state therapy. And sometimes it takes years, especially people who have preverbal trauma. Sometimes it takes years and years, especially the more extensive it is, the more heinous it is, the longer it takes. So sometimes it takes a while to help parts unburden because there's just so much junk and there's layers of burden too. So if all parts of self sort of get burden on this layer and we can work through this layer and then it goes deeper. There's lots of layers. So it gets complicated.
Yeah, I bet. I don't know how you do this every day with people.
That's a good
I
question.
mean, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. That maybe that's a whole episode in its own.
I think you're right.
How do therapists deal with listening to other people's shit all day? Oh, it's gotta be hard.
It can
Especially
be.
with somebody like you who is like me, can feel other people's energy
Oh,
and
yeah.
stuff like that. And I know you do telehealth 100%. So you're not in the room with them, but still you can still feel it through the Zoom or whatever.
Yeah, I had one guy who was so anxious all the time. I literally had to hang on, let's see if I can grab this just a sec. I literally had to grab my selenite and hold it the entire session, every
Oh
session
my
with this
God.
guy, because he was so anxious. By the time I would be done with the session, I would just be like sitting here shaking,
Yeah.
that anxious.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and that
And
was.
selenite helps with that.
Selenite does help with that.
I've got some right here.
Nice. Yeah. No, I made sure to get
Actually.
a big piece for myself.
Yeah, I have a couple, I think. This one actually is rose quartz. Oh, here's it. Here's the selenite.
Yeah. Yes.
That's pink, but it is. And then I have another one in my window because somewhere I read that you're supposed to put it in your window so it gets charged by the sun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So it's in my window right now. There's no sun today, but
And no, of course
it sits there all the time.
not. Yeah. So selenite definitely helps. Like we were talking earlier, we can feel the vibe from off of other people. And this is the same thing. And what I'm feeling off other people really tells me how burdened or not that their parts of self are. And with this guy, he didn't stick with me long because his protector part shut things down. As soon as I tried going deeper, his protector part didn't want to go there because he didn't want to. It was dealing with his parents, really, and he didn't want to go there. That's okay. He wasn't ready. He might never be, and that's okay too. So his protector
That's
part,
too bad when you
yeah.
think about it, though, because if going there, dealing with it is going to, I don't want to say fix, but make it better.
Right.
It's a shame that people aren't willing to do that. I understand not being ready,
Yeah.
but it would be sad if he never got the help he needed
Right.
and went through that anxiety and that nervous or whatever
Oh, yeah.
feeling his whole life. That would just, ugh.
The best thing I can say is protector parts know what's going on within the system of parts pretty well to be able to say we can handle this or we can't handle this. Protector parts, when they're really burdened, don't think that any part of the system can handle it when they can, but the readiness is part of that hope and expectation that things will get better. Part of the scariness of dealing with or being in therapy is going to places you may not think you need to go, whereas the therapist's like, we got to go here, and you're like, I don't know about that. And that's pretty much what that guy was doing. His protector part was shutting things down, and eventually he just stopped showing up. Like, that's fine. Whatever. That's fine. Because sometimes our expectations of ourselves, the world, how things are supposed to work, other people's expectations for us, that's our critical part, of course, those really interfere. Let's take toxic masculinity as an example. Like, if toxic masculinity says, well, I shouldn't have emotions and I should just be fine and just get to work, it's going to be all right. Well, then if I'm feeling any other emotion, then, well, I'm just being a little bitch, and so that's critical part shutting it down. And if critical part shutting it down, then protector's like, well, we can't go there, we got to shut it down. So these expectations that we don't even necessarily know we have sometimes really interfere. Society really interferes. I have a good amount of guys on my caseload currently, and I have my entire therapy career, but the vast majority of people in therapy are women. And the vast majority of the demographics of people in therapy are white, which there's a lot of historical things I can get into for people of color not having access to health care and so on and so forth, plus years of systemic institutional racism, so on and so forth. I mean, there's a lot of mistrust of like the medical community, even though I don't consider myself part of the medical community, there's still a lot of mistrust in that. So there's such a need for people of color to get into therapy. Public service announcement, people of color, please get into therapy.
And by get into therapy, you don't necessarily mean go to therapy. You mean become a
Yes,
therapist?
become a therapist. Yes, please. Yes. So needed.
For sure.
Yeah, so anyway, I could go on and on and on and on, but I will save the rest for another time.
All right. Well, thank you. This was excellent. And we'll be back next time with one of the parts. Do we know which part we want to do
What
next?
part do you want to do next?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I kid comes to mind first because that's mine that I'm dealing with. And also, I mean, that's everybody's first part, right?
Yes.
Unless it's maybe protector if something happened early on. But yeah, I mean, we all were kids.
Yeah. Okay.
So I kind of feel like that would be a good one
Let's
if
do
you're
it.
down with
I'm
that.
down.
All right,
Yes.
cool. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time when we talk about our kid parts.
Yes.
This Way In is a conversation about mental health and everyday well-being, but it is not therapy. Listening to this podcast does not create a therapist-client relationship, and the information we share is for educational and entertainment purposes only. If you are feeling overwhelmed or struggling with your mental health, please reach out to a qualified professional in your area. Never delay, disregard, or change professional recommendations or advice because of something you heard here. And please remember that any views expressed here are our own and don't represent any licensing boards. This Way In is co-produced by Brittany Baxter Dameron and me, Amy Lotzberg, at Collected Sounds Media. I also edit and manage the show, which is part of the Collected Sounds Independent Podcast Network.